I'm Andrew Murata, host of the Education Leadership and Beyond podcast, a part of the Education Podcast Network, just like the show you are listening to now. Shows on the network are individually owned and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other interesting education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com.
Hey, welcome back. Steve here, and today I'm talking with Stephen Carter. Stephen Carter inspires innovative thinking. He focuses on developing the entrepreneurial mindset in K through 12 students. His most recent book is our focus today, Teaching the Entrepreneurial Mindset, Innovative Education for K through 12 Schools. Oh, you're going to love this episode. It is inspiring. It is so powerful, and he's going to give you great ideas about making it happen at your school. Good stuff. By the way, before you go, thanks for listening. I mean, have you thought about trying to help out the podcast? Because there's a couple different ways you could do that. You know, one of them would be just tell a friend. Can you just find one friend and say, hey, you ought to listen to Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12. That would be so cool. You know, another way you could help out the podcast, go to my website and leave a review, you know, say a few nice words and maybe subscribe. That would be great. And then finally, how about click on the link on my website homepage where it says buy me a coffee. If you do that, you could donate a dollar or two to help me address the costs associated with producing the podcast. That would be so cool. Thanks so much for listening. Thanks so much for sharing. You are awesome. Enjoy the show.
Well, I love the question, Steve, because the word mindset is the most important word in that title, in that idea. And that's because often when you say teaching entrepreneurship, automatically your mind jumps to starting a business. Start a business. Well, that is, of course, inherent in entrepreneurship. But what I am more focused on is what does it mean to think like an entrepreneur?
It's the Education Podcast, your favorite show, with lots of groovy guests and they share what they know. So crank it up to 10 and let your neighbors know that here's another show with Dr. Steve Mileto. Teaching, learning, leading K-12. Teaching, learning, leading K-12. Teaching, learning, leading K-12. With Dr. Steve Mileto.
Stephen Carter's passion is inspiring innovative thinking around K through 12 education and helping students adopt the entrepreneurial mindset in approaches to problem solving and critical thinking. Part of this includes overseeing student-run business ventures, orchestrating academic programming around entrepreneurship, and scaling revenue-generating models. He has been blessed to have been part of the growth of a nationally recognized entrepreneurship program at Cincinnati Hills Christian Academy over the last 10 years, and has also published two books, the most recent one being Teaching the Entrepreneurial Mindset, Innovative Education for K-12 Schools, and that will be our focus today. In addition, he is the founder of Seedtree Group, an organization dedicated to developing entrepreneurship programs in private K-12 schools through speaking, consulting, and coaching. He has too many hobbies and can usually be found developing sourdough bread recipes, preparing for his next backpacking trip, experimenting with new vegetables, or trying to find his next good read. Stephen lives in Cincinnati, Ohio with his wife Ashley and two children. Our focus is Stephen's book, Teaching the Entrepreneurial Mindset, Innovative Education for K-12 Schools. Stephen, thanks so much for being on the show and say hi to everyone.
You know, thank you so much, Steve. It is a pleasure to be here.
Well, glad to have you here. And let's start about this. I mean, okay, this is cool. You got an interest in sourdough bread. So where'd that come from? And do you have a favorite recipe?
Let's start with the most important stuff, the bread, right? You know, it's something that's really fun for me. And it goes back to culinary roots. I've always been interested in food. I was an English teacher in a kind of a previous life, go back, you know, 18 years of education. And was always trying to get food into the English classroom. And who doesn't love bread? And for me, the world of sourdough bread enabled creativity, but within the constraints of understanding how bread and yeast works and everything. And truly, I just love working with it. And here's the fun fact, Steve. It's a way for me to convince my two kids to eat whole grains, right? So we're constantly upping the amount of whole wheat. Right now, we're at about 60% whole wheat. I think someday we'll get to 65 without them complaining.
Nice. That is awesome. And right now you're making me crave bread. So that's sourdough bread. Yes. Good stuff. I had to laugh when I found that part about you have too many favorite hobbies. too many hobbies going on. So, and you like to read. So what's something you like to read?
You know, I make it a practice of reading 52 books a year, and I started doing this when I was 21 and I just turned 41. And so that adds up over time. And for the last 8 years, those books have focused on personal development, success, personal finance, and business. And of course, one of my favorites, one that I reread every year, is The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. Stephen Covey has said it best, and a lot of people have imitated, but he has gold in that book.
You got that right. I've had the good fortune to last year sometime, interviewed the president of the Franklin Covey Company, and she was talking about the different iterations of that book that have gone through, and which is awesome, because I have one that was given to me by a mentor ages ago, and I got to meet recently his son, Sean. I believe it's Sean Covey, and he was at a conference that I was at, and so that's cool. I love that book. That is awesome.
And Sean was involved in the book, The 4 Disciplines of Execution, which actually is used in the entrepreneurship programming that I do, because it's a great method to teach goal setting to kids.
Awesome. I love that. So very cool. All right. So our focus today is your book, Teaching the Entrepreneurial Mindset, Innovative Education for K-12 Schools. So help me understand, what do you mean by entrepreneurial mindset?
Well, I love the question, Steve, because the word mindset is the most important word in that title, in that idea. And that's because often when you say teaching entrepreneurship, automatically your mind jumps to starting a business. Start a business. Well, that is, of course, inherent in entrepreneurship. But what I am more focused on is, what does it mean to think like an entrepreneur? You know, when you look at entrepreneurs who are successful, you're looking at people who can pivot, who think outside the box. They're creative problem solvers. They're comfortable with being uncomfortable. What if we could take these attributes, package them, distill them, and teach them to students? So no matter what walk of life they go into, whether they start a business, whether they're an accountant, lawyer, whatever, if they think like an entrepreneur, they are going to be more poised for success. And so really, this was a journey of 10 years of distilling the entrepreneurial mindset. And Steve, if you Google this, you'll find no less than about 85 attributes of what it means to have an entrepreneurial mindset. Everybody has a list. And this was a little overwhelming at first, is, well, we're going to teach 85 attributes to these kids. What we discovered is there are 4 attributes at the core. And if we can focus in and really train and teach our students to develop these 4 attributes, they are ready to take off. And I know we'll get into the heart of this in the talk, but briefly, those attributes are a growth mindset, grit, redefining failure, and opportunity seeking. That is what I mean when I say entrepreneurial mindset.
Awesome. I love it. I appreciate you explaining that. And then, you know, if you want, we can start number 1 and go through 85 if you want. Never mind. I'm just,
I don't know if we have that much time.
All right. So now this is kind of a trick question, because what I'm asking you here is this: why did you write this book, Teaching the Entrepreneurial Mindset? And part of the trick question to it is, you know, lots of people have ideas about books, but you actually wrote it.
So you know, here's why, Steve. It comes down to this. I was actually watching a YouTube video by Robert Kiyosaki several years ago, and he was talking about fake teachers. And he was saying, why would I want to take an accounting class from someone who wasn't an accountant? Like, what's going on there? Well, this hit home for me, because I was teaching entrepreneurship, and my training was as an English teacher. But what I realized is, what I was really teaching was a mindset. And if I wanted to teach that mindset, I had to develop that mindset. So part of this journey was, how do I train myself to think like an entrepreneur so it flows out of me and influences the students? So the writing of the book was really the digging into a principle. Now, this program is very principle-based. And when I say principles, I mean principles like belief drives behavior. You know, a lot of people will experience failure in certain areas because they don't believe that success is possible. So their behaviors follow suit. But the principle that I love, that I hang my hat on, that I talk about everywhere I go, is consistency compounds. So you want to sit down and write a 300-page book. Virtually impossible. But what you can do is write one page every day for 300 days. And I'm talking about this in class. This is the principle of compound interest. And in talking about that, I realized I had to put my money where my mouth was, right? I'm talking about, oh, you could write a book one page a day. So nice. I decided, let me demonstrate it in real time. And I did. I published my first book in 2021, and it was on consistency compounds in the form of teaching personal finance to teens. This book, this new one, Teaching the Entrepreneurial Mindset, was a labor of love because I was getting all kinds of questions from schools saying, how do we do this? How do we create meaningful entrepreneurship programming that teaches mindset to students? And I thought, well, how about I write a page a day and tell you exactly how this happened? And that's what I did.
Very cool. Very cool. That's awesome. And it is a very good book. It's easy to read and understand and follow your thought processes. And like that. So good stuff. Early in the book, you say this: what I am here to dispute is the ideology underlying the assumption that training in critical thinking leads to greater academic success. Could you put this in context and share what you mean?
Yes, absolutely. And I'm laughing because, you know, it sounds in the way it's worded there, like I'm gearing up for a fight. Because as an educator and as someone who spends the bulk of my time around other educators, critical thinking is kind of sacred. You know, I think even back to like the 90s and the 80s, it's like, oh, we teach critical thinking. We teach critical thinking. And, you know, Steve, I've got a little bit of a chip on my shoulder here because I look around in society and I say, if schools have been teaching critical thinking for 30 years, where are all the critical thinkers? You know what I mean? And sometimes I think it's an excuse for a school to be let off the hook a little bit. You know, we're teaching critical thinking because it is so hard to assess when you've become a critical thinker, right? So, you know, how do we exactly assess that? And sometimes I feel that we get so caught up in saying we're teaching critical thinking that we forget that if learning leads to knowledge, it doesn't actually go anywhere. But if learning leads to action, then true learning takes place. And what I'm arguing, there's nothing wrong with, I love critical thinking. I love teaching critical thinking, but how can we put it into action? Action will be the key word throughout my whole book and my philosophy. Let's act. Let's do. Entrepreneurs are biased for action. That's what separates them, right? They're going to act. So let's act on that knowledge.
Love that. And by the way, yeah, I read it a couple of times because when I first read it, I'm like, whoa, okay, here we go. We're getting ready to get into it here. And it was awesome where you went with that. And by the way, having been someone who was a teacher in the late, in the 90s and principal in the 2000s, you can find that word in just about every, and I'm talking about critical thinking in just about everybody's mission statement. So
yes.
That was very popular. So I love what you're thinking here. This is good stuff. That whole getting to action is what you want. So, you know, one of the things I want to bring up now is in the beginning of your book, and I could have made this entire talk surround your beginning of the book. There is so much great info in there that literally could be just the, hey, we're going to talk about the introduction only today type thing.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
But you note this: how can we reward a teacher's desire for growth? I'm glad you asked. This is you saying this in the book. With freedom, autonomy, and resources. So let's talk about this. I love
yes,
this.
Yes, 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 absolutely. And this is the beauty of it. We have a program, and really it's a mindset. It's bigger than a program. This is about a cultural shift in education. Like if you get me at my core, here's what I'm going to tell you is my mission is to develop the entrepreneurial mindset in all learners so they are radically transformed to impact their lives. And embedded in that mission statement is all learners. Not just students, This is parents. This is teachers. This is administrators. This is an entire school culture. And here's why. We can talk all day long about growth mindset. We can talk about Carol Dweck and her research. We can even talk about some of the most recent controversy over growth mindset and whether we're assessing in the right way and all that. Here's the important thing. If we have a teacher who has a growth mindset, but that teacher is operating in a fixed mindset system where the administrators have capped the potential, they've put a lid on the organization, that teacher will not be able to flourish and truly engage and impact the students. So when I get an administrator who says, hey, you know, I'm interested in this. I want to give my teachers these opportunities. Liz Wiseman wrote a wonderful book called Impact Players, where she identifies that the impact players in your organizations, Seth Godin would call them linchpins, right? These impact players need to be given freedom. And if they are given that freedom, here's the beauty, the ROI, they will create more impact players. Their influence will spread. But if you clip their wings, all you've done is limit their potential and the potential growth of your organization. But I'm also quick to say this. They need freedom, but not too much, right? With unlimited freedom, now we run into some problems. One of the other principles that we base our program on is constraints breed creativity. So yes, freedom, but let's create some constraints. And the same is true for autonomy. And I do separate those two concepts. I know they're similar, but the autonomy is if we have to run ideas up the chain as a teacher, every time we want to try something new, we're going to stop trying things new. That's just a fact. When we look at the red tape that's inherent in a lot of schools, all that's doing is keeping innovative teachers from engaging students. I mean, let's face it. So autonomy, but not too much. And then finally, resources. You know, you want your innovative teacher to do things, but then you're going to say, due to budget cuts, we don't have money for this, that, or that. Well, I mean, come on. If what we're really trying to do is create a valuable learning experience for students, we have to build into our teachers because they are the ones who are delivering that value. And that's such an important concept. It's a value proposition. What's the value? Who's delivering that value? And how are we giving them the freedom, autonomy, and resources to blow that out of the water and create raving fans? Look, Steve, you got me all excited because that's what the whole book is about.
Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. And I love your energy. This is awesome. You know, and it's so right on. And it's like, you know, because one of the things that when you're talking about running it up the chain, it's like there's... I am providing resources. I just got to tell you, I gotta say this. So, I've been around long enough that this just is a note. This is my 37th year in education. All right. So, I remember when this one school system I went to was starting to make it so they had outfit all their schools with the same types of computers. All right. So, because they had a mishmash, and so they were looking at trying to figure out whether they should. The high school should have DOS-based, or this really dates me, by the way, PCs, or they should have Apples, or is it the younger kids should have the Apples and the older kid, you know, that type of thing. And meanwhile, somebody at the county office was finding out about all these cool software programs that existed out there, was starting to put together these presentations on what we could do when we get those computers. And so I had several trainings that took place in a classroom with all these people looking forward to being trained on how to use the computers to do these neat creative things without computers. Mm. I mean, we were there. I don't mean they were teaching us how to do it without computers. They were teaching us how to use computers, but there were no computers in the training session. So we're sitting there watching this person be creative. And then we were told, yeah, now go out there and just remember this. All right. One day you will have computers. Anyway, resources help. So nice. I love the energy. This is good stuff. All right. So, this is leading me right to this, and the way this section opens is really incredible because many teachers have experienced the same thing about not being really good at saying no. Or
yes, that's how you identify your impact players. By the way, they're doing 12 different things. They're coaching. They've got a team. They've got full. Yeah, that's how you know.
I love it. I love it. And so, can you tell us a little bit about running the school coffee cart and what that led to?
Absolutely. And really, you know, back in 2014, when this opportunity was teed up for me, I had no idea where this was going to go. But, you know, hindsight's 2020. So here I was, my wife and I were expecting our second child. I was coaching cross country. I was doing the debate team. I was teaching 6 English classes. I mean, I was doing it. I was doing it all. And of course, that's when my principal decides to come to me and say, Stephen, we've got this idea for this rolling mobile coffee cart. You know, we're going to have kids run it. You know, can you oversee it? And so obviously, had I been thinking at the time, I would have said, no, I've got too much on my plate. But I said, of course, this sounds great. I did say this, however, I said, you know, it's interesting. I mentioned freedom, autonomy, and resources. I had the foresight to say to him, I'm going to need some money to run this properly, and I need to be able to let it grow as big as possible. And he looked at me and he said, Stephen, that's why I chose you. Do it. So I did. Nice. And by the way, on that note, I went to him the next week. I said, I need $30,000 to do this coffee thing. And he said, well, no, but what we will do is give you $10,000 as a loan from the school that the kids can pay back. Now, remember when I said constraints breed creativity, if we had been given that $30,000, I don't think the program would have been as successful. But we were given 10, we had to be creative. And let me tell you something, that first group of students, 18 students who helped build this bar, get this thing off the ground, they were creative. And it really wasn't until years later that we figured out what we were actually teaching them. But in real time, they were building a business, they were marketing that business, and year after year, it kept getting larger and larger. I think the first year we had $5,000 in gross sales. And that business has been built up to $50,000 in gross sales on a yearly basis, just in a high school in Cincinnati. And that business turned into 5 other businesses on our campus run by students. We have a wood-fired pizza oven business. We have, and Steve, I have not checked all the facts on this, but I'm pretty sure we have the world's first fine dining restaurant run by high school students on a high school campus. 8-course meals, caviar, oysters. I mean, it's insane.
Nice.
And these kids are running the show, and it started with a rolling mobile coffee cart and a principal who asked a teacher to oversee it. And from there, it just took off.
That's so cool. You give me shivers right now. This is awesome. I love this type of focus and getting kids involved in it and so forth. I mean, you're talking to someone who I went to places to fix things. All right. And so that's the high schools where I was principal. That's why I went there. And and one of the things I just dreamed about was because I had to recreate a career tech field where it's horticulture in several schools where they had it and it collapsed or they never had it and they should type of thing. And one of the things I wanted to go along with that was aquaculture where they were raising fish like tilapia to then sell to the public. And I got... Talk about constraints. I found out about all the rules when you want to sell fish for food. I was like, whoo. I had one guy tell me, he goes, how we get around that at our school is we just do a big fish fry.
There you go. And by the way, that language, how we get around that, that's a learning experience in and of itself that kids get to be a part of. And they don't always know at the time what they're learning. But after the fact, it's like, wow, we navigated that problem.
I love it. This is awesome. So do you take reservations at the restaurant?
That's right. Listen, it sells out and it's pretty remarkable. You know, people will pay $200 for a ticket for this thing. And it is remarkable food. Nice. that blows them away. But the thing that's so remarkable is it is made, plated, and served by 16-year-olds, 17-year-olds. And the one in charge is a 17-year-old kid. And he's calling the shots. He's the chef. I mean, it's remarkable to see.
That's so cool. Awesome. All right. So let's get into some of the parts that you talked about. You talked a little bit about the growth mindset and so forth. You know, what I'd like to do is jump ahead to grit. So why is it important for students to develop grit?
Grit is such an important topic. And Angela Duckworth is, of course, the reigning expert on this. And her book, Grit, is incredibly inspirational. I believe every educator should read it. But here's why this is important. Now, if you read any article, whether it's Forbes or Harvard Business Week, that has anything to do with the skills required to thrive in the 21st century, one of those skills is going to be resilience. Resilience is, of course, a fancy word for grit, but I like grit because grit really says what's required. Grit is about the effort. One of the things that Duckworth tells us is that effort trumps talent. Effort is more important than talent. So think about the encouragement here. If you're a high school kid and you're looking at someone who might be smarter, they might be faster, they might have more natural ability, and then you say to them, listen, if you put forth the effort, you win in the end. Effort is what is most important. Now, with that being said, I get the question all the time, Stephen, come on, how do you actually teach grit? Now, by the way, this question usually comes from business owners. I spend a lot of time talking to business owners. And my first question for them is, what qualities do you want in the people that you're hiring? And they say, I want them to work hard. I want them to have grit. I want them to like have hands-on ownership. And I say, boy, have we got the program for you at this school. Then they say, Stephen, how do you actually teach grit? I mean, you don't actually teach grit, right? To which I say, right, we don't. Here's what we do teach. We teach goal setting. One of the things Angela Duckworth does is she explains that grit is about passion and perseverance toward long-term goals. Grit, in other words, is the byproduct. And this is really important because if we go in there and we say, all right, listen, today we're going to get grittier. I mean, no one's going to be like, oh, yay, right? But if we go in and say, hey, let's set a goal. In fact, let's set a wildly important goal, what Jim Collins would call a BHAG, right? Let's set one of those. Now we're going to establish lead measures to get us to that goal. And when we reach that goal, we are going to celebrate. Then we're going to set a new goal. Here's what happens. As they do that, they're developing grit as a byproduct. Because on that path to goal setting, they're having to understand that passion is incredibly important. But passion fades. And this is an important lesson for all walks of life. That new job you love, a year later, will you still have the passion? That new thing you just bought, that new relationship you're in, passion fades. But perseverance is what will carry the distance. If we can get high school kids to develop passion and perseverance around goal setting, I guarantee you without a doubt, these kids will be grittier as a result, and they will be more apt to thrive in the VUCA world, right? The volatility, uncertainty, complexity, ambiguity, if they are gritty.
Oh, I love this. This is awesome. Yeah, this is, and especially because there's so many things that, many kids, one of the things they do is they run into a barrier and it's like, oh, I'm done. You know, it's like, really, I think you play plenty of video games where one barrier and the next thing you know is you're finding a hidden vine to grow, take you up to the next level. What are you talking about? You're done. And, I like that. The resilience being a fancy word for grit. I like that. So good, good stuff. And it plays through this because it's so, that's what our world is. There's so many different things we have to figure out how to go through, around, on top of, find another way to deal with. And if you don't have that ability to think about that, then you do give up and you just say, it wasn't meant to be.
Steve, that's one of the primary things that I'm on a mission to change is that traditional educational model laid out a clear path for students. Go here, do this, here's what happens as a result. But anymore, there's not a clear path. There are variables and there is complexity and there is volatility. So instead of telling students, here's the path, why don't we give them the tools to navigate whatever that path ends up looking like? Now, it kind of goes back to that teach a person to fish idea, right? You have the tools, you can navigate, you don't have to be on a prescribed path.
I love it. One of the things that you get into and that is a big part of this world right now is, the idea that failure is good for you, all right? And, you can learn from it and you should not fear it. So can you talk a little bit about your thoughts about students and failure?
This is the issue of our four attributes. This is the one that causes the most trouble, the most pushback, right? Because it is so easy to get up there and say, don't fear failure, embrace failure. Okay, listen, it's enough for us as adults to pretend like we don't fear failure when we do. How about putting yourself in the mind of a 16-year-old kid who is afraid of failure above all else? Fear of rejection by friends, by someone they might ask out, fear of rejection on the sports team. I mean, fear of failure is rampant. So we can't just get up there and say, don't fear failure. I mean, that makes us sound like we're so disconnected from that. And you know, as an educator, as soon as you present yourself as disconnected, you've lost them. You're done, right? I don't want to get off topic here, but there's a great quote in the book, A Prayer for Owen Meany by John Irving, where the character Dan Needham, who's an English teacher, so I love him for that.
Nice.
The narrator says Dan Needham never forgot how awful it was to be a high school student. And that made him a great teacher. And here's what I would say about that failure piece is it's not about getting up there and saying, don't fear failure, don't fear failure. It's about redefining failure. It's about saying, listen, I know it's scary. I know that there's a chance it won't succeed. But the true failure is if we never try in the first place. And there's a quote that I absolutely love. And that quote is, regret for the things that we did will fade. It will. It will fade over time. But regret for the things that we didn't do or didn't try, that regret will last the rest of our lives. So to educators out there, what I would say is, listen, if we can help our students minimize that lifelong regret from not trying something. I mean, Steve, I bet you and I could go back and forth on the things that we didn't try in high school or college and we regret it, right? Maybe it's like someone that we were like, oh, I want to ask them out and you don't, or I should have gone out for that sport. I should have tried, right?
Oh yeah.
True failure is not trying in the first place. Let's redefine the word for our students so they do try and they understand that success is not guaranteed, but failure is part of the journey toward success.
I love that. I love it. Now, you know, one of the things I've learned over time is that it's really difficult to get authors to pick their favorite chapter. So I started doing that myself, because a lot of times what the authors will do is they'll say things like, ah, that's like picking my favorite kid or something like that. And so I've stopped doing that, but instead I've chosen my favorite, which my favorite in your book is the one I'm getting ready to refer to, where you talk about embracing opportunity. And I was wondering if we could have a discussion around why that's so important.
It's so important for many reasons, and I'll tee up the reason and then get a little bit into the backstory. And the reason is, you talk to anybody, they're going to say, well, entrepreneurs, yeah, sure, they solve problems. And they solve those problems with a business concept. That's the basic definition, right? So problem solving is at the core of it. But as an entrepreneurial-minded person, these aren't problems. No. These are opportunities. See, now we've reframed our mindset. Now we get excited. I work with elementary teachers and I have them, I have their students create opportunity boxes. Okay. Now think about this, like on a very simple level, a kid like comes across a problem. Okay. I was late to school today because my brother wouldn't get in the car. My alarm didn't go off, whatever it is. Now they get excited. They're like, ooh, I can put that in my opportunity box. We're reframing the thinking. Right? If you get excited about a problem because it means an opportunity to solve that problem, boy, you are thinking like an entrepreneur. And here's what that's rooted in. It goes back to a character in Greek mythology, Kairos. And Kairos is the god of opportunity. And he's portrayed as having a single lock of hair at the front of his head, and the back of his head is completely bald. And the reason that's important, he's got winged feet. And man, he flies everywhere. But if you are ready, if you are on your tiptoes anticipating, you can grab that lock of hair as he's running by. If not, all you're going to grab is the back of his bald head. And the reason that's so important is sometimes we think we can sit back and wait for opportunity to come to us. It doesn't work like that. It does not work like that. And then you get jaded and you say, oh, I'm not lucky. Nothing ever comes my way. Well, are you looking? Are you seeking? Kairos is right around the corner. And the thing is, he's going to keep going toward the person who grabs that hair. Are you the kind of person who's willing to seek, to grab, to try? Because let me tell you, opportunities are everywhere, right? And that's because problems abound. Let's have a generation of young adults who say, yes, I love that, because that is an opportunity.
That's so cool. You know, it's like I've run into it in many different ways when you see young people trying to make that opportunity happen, or they've got something. And, you know, it's just, it's one of my favorite things when you see someone trying to make something out of a challenge or some difficulty or something like this. And they're trying to make it that, instead of, making lemonade out of lemons or whatever that saying is. And I love that. All right. So let's talk a minute like this. Here's a scenario. Stephen, if you had a chance to talk with an auditorium filled with school principals, all levels, about your book, because I almost said high school, because that's my background, right? And I'm like, no. We need to do all levels, because you do all levels, all right? So, and you're talking about your book, Teaching the Entrepreneurial Mindset, Innovative Education for K-12 Schools, and you're the closing speaker for the day. What would you want them talking to one another about when they left that auditorium?
Steve, the answer to that for me is very clear. And it's come over the last several years as schools visit our campus in Cincinnati. They see our beautiful greenhouse. They see our teaching kitchen. They see our coffee bar. And they kind of say, boy, we don't have any of this. We don't have the resources. We don't have these. And by the way, we didn't either. They grew with the program. Here's what I want. I want people to walk away with a clear call to action. Remember, entrepreneurs are biased for action. If we let learning lead to knowledge, we've not fully assimilated. Let it lead to action. Go back to your school. Where do you see a space for entrepreneurship? It might be an unlikely space, right? Remember the whole craze of maker spaces and innovation spaces? Some of those schools, those didn't pan out, right? The innovation happens in unlikely spaces. It might be happening in your concession stand. It might be happening in the hall where that kid is selling fidget spinners out of her locker, right? Let's look for that. Let's look for the person. Look for the space. Look for the person. Look for that impact player that students are gravitating toward. Let's get with them and let's make a plan. Because my point is this. We cannot continue down the road we've been on as educators. What got us here will not get us there. We have to engage our students. If you look at statistics of engagement, only 30% of U.S. employees report being engaged at work. And that number is startlingly similar to the number of 10th grade students who report being engaged at school. Let's flip those numbers. Let's create engagement. Let's do it. Let's act. And we can and we will. That is what I want.
Love it. That is awesome. That is so awesome. Hey, Stephen, we're getting close to finishing up. If someone wanted to learn more, get a copy of your book, or reach out to you, where would you send them?
You know, the best place is LinkedIn. I'm very active on LinkedIn. I post 3 times a week. And out of there, you'll be able to subscribe to my newsletter. And if you're an educator listening to this, this newsletter goes out every Monday. And it is meaningful because it is specific to something you can do at your school to create a culture of entrepreneurial mindset. That newsletter is connected to a podcast where I do a 10-minute post every week on an entrepreneurial idea. And from there, you can read more about this on my website, seedtreegroup.com. I do work with schools on programmings like this. I consult and coach and speak professional development, but mostly it's about spreading the entrepreneurial mindset.
Love it. And I'll put information and links in the show note so they can reach out to you on LinkedIn and get that newsletter and listen to your podcast. Good stuff. I got one last question for you, which is a question I like to ask my guests, and it goes like this. So do you have a teacher in your past who made a difference in your life? And if so, who was it? And what would you say if given the chance to say thank you?
And I love the question, Steve, because I think so often as educators, we yearn to know the impact that we make, and we often don't hear about it. But if you talk to anybody and say, who was an impactful teacher you had in school? Everyone can rattle off a name. And then you say, did you tell them? And it's like, So I made a habit when I became an English teacher. I became an English teacher because of Mr. Swift. Mr. Swift at Marymount High School, where I went to school, was my 9th grade English teacher, and he was difficult. I got a B in that class. But I learned more in that class, and I tried harder, and I put forth more effort, and that class made me want to become an English teacher because of how hard it made me work. And I wanted to bring that to other students. And I credit Mr. Swift for that. I have made multiple attempts to reach out to him, but you know, this was before email and all that stuff. And he's been very difficult to get a hold of.
It's so cool. Like what you were saying, there's if there is that impact person that did whatever that was for you, have you said something to him or something like that? And, you know, it's funny. I wish that I had done that sooner. good thing is, I may have been too late for some of my. There's two high school teachers that I would have identified, but I was able to do it with college, and a couple of them wrote me back, even though they had retired. It was cool. Someone got made sure they got it, and then I got a card back from them, which was really cool. But
That's excellent.
I love everything you're talking about, Stephen. Thank you so much for sharing your book, Teaching the Entrepreneurial Mindset, Innovative Education for K-12 Schools. First of all, you're magical, man. I love this. I love the energy. I love the passion. It is so awesome. I mean, what an awesome focus you have. Your thoughts and words are inspiring, and I wish you all the best in everything you do.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Hey, you have been listening to Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12, a podcast to help you help kids achieve their dreams. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is a member of the Education Podcast Network. Podcasts for educators, podcasts by educators. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is a member of the podcast network based in Canada called Voice Ed Radio. Voice Ed Radio, your voice is right here. The opinions expressed on Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 are those of the guests and host. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is intended to share ideas, advice, and suggestions. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is produced for educational purposes. Hey, thanks for listening. It would be awesome if you visited my website at stephenmileto.com and connected with me, left a review, and listened to more episodes. And by the way, you could also share it with your friends, with your family, and your colleagues. Thanks so much. You're awesome.